for my money, one of the best guys around is the guy that's behind me, Ed Kieser. Ed's been at the station for a long time, a little longer than I have, I think. I've been there on and off 21 years predicting weather for Illinois and Indiana. And if you want to know what's going to happen in this state or in my home state of Illinois, then Ed Kieser's the one to tune into. Give Ed a round of applause, please. Ed, thank you for coming out today. I was reminded by one of our listeners that Elwin Taylor says that this is a drought year. You can take that up or not take that up. It's all up to you, but the program is yours now.
Thank you very much. I will take that up in my presentation today. I'm amazed at the attendance today. This is maybe a record, and the weather is not good. 10 years ago for the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting in March, I think it was probably the second Tuesday in March that year, because that's when we usually had the Outlook meeting. The day before, we had a lot of rain, and then the temperature suddenly dropped into the 20s, and we ended up with a thick layer of slush that froze solid. And I remember driving over here in bright sunshine, and it took over an hour from Champaign-Urbana, well over an hour, about an hour and a half. I think it took about 45 minutes just to get from Champaign to Ogden because of that colossal mess. I had never seen ruts in the interstate so big from the slush that froze. And that, I think, was about the end of our string of really bad weather for the all-day Outlook meetings until today. And we do have freezing rain out there right now. It's kind of borderline. It looks like it's not really icing up on the roads yet, but you may have to scrape your windshield if your car has been sitting out there for a while today. And as you go east and southeast, temperatures are a little warmer right now. So it's mainly a liquid type of precipitation that there might be a few icy spots, so keep that in mind. If you're going west, I have worse news for you. When I left Champaign-Urbana a couple of hours ago, it was already snowing. We had a snow-sleet mix, and we were approaching about an inch already. And when I got on the interstate, the traffic was down to 45 miles per hour. And I got out of it quickly. But the one thing I'll just want all of you to keep in mind, I know a lot of you drive big vehicles, and they can get through snow well, but there's a lot of ice spots that may be forming. So just keep that in mind as you're driving home, that it could be icy in spots, and you don't want to take any unnecessary risk, because we want everybody that's here today to get home safely. With that, I'm going to start talking about the ag weather a little bit. And what I want to do first is just take a little bit of a trip back into where we have been, because that helps lead into where we are going. So looking back, a few of you may have seen this map already, because I've used it in a couple other presentations I've done in the last few months. But last summer, it was pretty hot in the Great Plains and in the Rocky Mountain states on into the southeast. You may recall hearing about the drought in the southeast. And it was pretty cool. We call it mild in the summertime for New England. And we were right on the edge of all this. So we had what we call a ring of fire pattern. That is where thunderstorms form on the edge of the hot dome. The hot dome is generally dry. And by the way, it didn't sit like this for months. Sometimes this area expanded, sometimes it contracted. But we got timely rains over much of the Midwest because we were on the edge of the hot dome. So as we look back at rainfall during the course of the summer, this would be June through August, it was pretty wet in northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin, but it was pretty dry in the Ohio River Valley. But most areas got enough rain and at least timely rain so that we ended up having a pretty big crop this past year. And in the Midwest, basically some of the Ohio Valley areas where yields were reduced due to dryness. And as far as temperatures were concerned, seasonable temperatures over the summer, so we didn't have any prolonged heat waves causing problems. In fact, we had more 90-degree days in this part of the country in October than we had in July. So that led into the fall. This is September, October, November, and it was warmer than average for that three-month period. And, of course, the crops finished up rather quickly. It was also a rather dry period over the main part of the Corn Belt, which led to pretty quick harvest. The only area where there was a problem really was back up in Minnesota and northwestern Iowa and South Dakota. It did get pretty wet up that way, so they had a little bit of a slower harvest. So now we're moving into the closer time frame, and this past winter just ending. This would be for December, January, and February. And precipitation totals, well, anywhere in blue, over 11 inches of precipitation fell during that three-month period. And typically, we only get about 2 inches. That's our average in January and about 2 inches in February. So a little more in December, but on average, about 7 inches would fall in this area. A little more in the Ohio Valley, less to the northwest. But many areas were above average. In fact, here's the comparison to average. Those areas in blue were more than 150% of average. So it was quite a wet winter. Abundant moisture over most of the Midwest. Slightly dry once you get into the Tennessee Valley. And one area that's been drying out the last few months, even compared to average, because it's usually dry in the Northwest, is up in Minnesota and South Dakota. So if there's going to be any dry issues early on this season, it's going to be up that way. Okay, as far as temperatures, a big contrast during the winter, and that's partly why we had a lot of precipitation. When it's cold to the northwest and warm to the southeast, the jet stream is from southwest to northeast. You tap Gulf moisture, and indeed, it was very chilly compared to average over Iowa and places to the west, but near average over our area when you take every day over that three-month period. Of course, we have been cooler than average of late, including during the month of February. And finally, on a couple of these maps, I'll just show you the departure from the mean in inches of precipitation. By the way, these maps are courtesy of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, Illinois. And we are above average by a couple inches for the last 30 days over most of our area. As we look at the last 90 days, we're way above average. There's Watseek, Illinois, where the floodings occurred. That's a bullseye for some of the heavier rainfall over the last 3 months. And we can even back it up a little more. Here's the 180-day precipitation departure. This is in comparison to average. And, again, most of the area above average. Average would be right along this line here between the light green and the dark green. So even back to the northwest, if you look at the last 6 months, it's been above average on precipitation. So going in to this growing season, there's plenty of moisture. Now, before I talk about what's coming up in the future, I want to just briefly touch on South America. That's the only area globally I'm going to have slides on. If anybody has any questions at the end of the presentation about the world, I'll try to talk about those. But in the interest of time, we'll just talk briefly about South America. And in South America, again, a big growing area from Argentina up into Brazil, a pretty large distance from the southern growing areas of Argentina to the northern growing areas of Brazil. So there was a wide variety of weather. In general, conditions were favorable through the growing season for corn and soybeans in South America. There were some issues with dryness in Argentina for a while, some pockets drier than others, so there's going to be a higher variability in yields. It was also dry for a while in Rio Grande do Sul in Brazil, but I don't think long enough to really seriously impact the big picture too much. It was a little dry in the northeast to begin with. But of late, rain, too much rain has been the issue. And one thing we have to watch is the slow harvest in the northern production areas of Brazil. Minas Gerais, Goiás, Mato Grosso, Bahia. They're harvesting now. They're getting a lot of rain. There could be some issues with some of the crops getting waterlogged with the harvest, and there could be some reductions there. That's one thing to at least look out for. And I knew I'd eventually do this. Let's see if I can go back. No, never mind. We'll just go forward. Parts of Argentina are getting rain, but that's going to finish off the crops pretty well. So my comments on South America, big crop is expected. Local issues of dryness and wetness did occur, but the majority of the crop areas had timely rainfall. I think the variability in the crop will be greater coming in from Argentina. And near-term concerns of a slow harvest due to wet conditions are prevailing in the northern production areas of Brazil. So that's one thing from our global competitor area that we got to watch now. But the growing season's pretty much done. Now we're just looking at harvest there. All right. We're going to come back now to an update on the drought or lack thereof in the United States and start to look ahead at what I think is going to happen this spring and summer. And, of course, that's what you want me to comment on, I think. And I'll just tell you right now, as always, I don't have all the answers. So I'm not going to tell you on July 17th it's going to be this in Crawfordsville, Indiana, and on August 7th it's going to be that in Bloomington, Illinois. We can't do that. It's not possible. I think you all really know that. Some will tell you it can be done, but not accurately. But here's what we do know. First of all, looking at the drought situation, here's a look at the current soil moisture in the Midwest. This is in the top foot of the soil. And basically, some areas are slightly dry in the Ohio River Valley right now. But other areas are pretty, or near to a little bit above average. But here, when we look at the top 6 feet of soil, so you're getting down into the subsoil a little bit, it's very, very moist in northwestern Illinois and east central and southeastern Iowa. It's very, very, very moist, believe it or not, in the eastern portions of Kansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota and southwestern Minnesota. There's no real problems with soil moisture in the main corn production and bean production areas. However, it is quite dry in North Dakota and northern Minnesota, so that's an area we're going to watch. It's also still rather dry in southern Kentucky southward from the drought last summer. But going into this growing season, as was the case last year, we have a lot of subsoil moisture. So that is one thing that is favorable for good crop development this year. There's at least some water in the ground for use by the crops if the roots get down there far enough. Now, as far as the drought goes, here's a map from January 1st, the very beginning of the year. There was a little hydrological drought around St. Louis, the major drought in the southeastern states from Alabama into the Carolinas. And we also had a few areas dry in the upper Midwest, and especially out in the western Dakotas, outside the main growing areas, and, of course, drought forming in the hard red winter wheat belt. Now we're going to move things along to the current map, so just kind of watch here as I do a fade, and we go from the beginning of the year, move it along almost 2 months, and you'll see the southeast drought will shrink. You're going to see that this area will disappear, but this area will expand a little bit. Ready? Here we go. Here's the latest map. Still drought in Alabama, Tennessee, northern Georgia, into the Carolinas. But it's improved. They've gotten rain of late, and the topsoil is actually going to be abundant here from the delta into the southeast, and they may have a slow start to the planting season. But this drought area is contracting in size, not expanding. When I get to the comments, keep that in mind. This area, where there were pockets of dryness, pretty much have faded. But we have seen a little bit of an expansion in the western Minnesota and the eastern Dakotas of drought. And this area out here in the western plains where hard red winter wheat is grown, the drought is starting to grow as well. So the two concerns I have are with the wheat and also the spring wheat, of course, up in the northern plains and perhaps the northwestern corn belt if that area expands a little bit. The long-range outlooks. I'm going to go through some of these quickly. I've got some maps on the 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 day. And basically, right now we're in a pattern where it's kind of cool in the east. It's more than kind of cool now. This is starting March 9th through 13th, so the cooling starts to abate by then. I think from now through about the 10th or 11th of March, we're going to be running well below average on temperature around here. Warm out west. Precipitation, we're actually going to see some over the next 7 days or so, see some precipitation coming through every few days. But the pattern is going to shift temporarily, at least, to a slightly drier. But as we go to the 8 to 14 day outlook, this is for the week after this week, it looks like that's when we have the best chance of maybe having a break in the precipitation, according to the Climate Prediction Center, although I'm not so sure I agree with this map entirely, because I still see weather systems parading through every few days. It just looks like they're not quite as intense as what we've been going through in recent weeks. But, by the way, that last map here, I think it was temperature. Here's the precipitation map. How do I get rid of that? For some reason, this is not doing what I thought it would do. So it's going to block it. Anyway, I'll just show you. Here's some. Okay. The. Oh, no! Dave was looking at it like he knew something there. There was a premonition. Well, we talk about unstable atmosphere when we go into spring. I guess maybe I need to stand on this thing. All right. Well, anyway, as we look at the 8 to 14 day, there are going to be weather systems coming off the Pacific Ocean still into the Pacific Northwest, which has also been very wet, and some of that will be heading this way. These outlook, I guess the bottom line I want to say, I want to show you these maps for the next couple weeks. There's some uncertainty starting to evolve, but I think for the next week at least, we're going to remain cooler than average, and we're going to have at least some precipitation coming through about every 2 to 3 days, although not all well-organized weather systems. All right. Moving ahead, here's the outlook for March. Above average temperatures in the Gulf Coast, a bit below average in the Pacific Northwest, in part because of all those weather systems coming in. It's expected to be wet out there. I agree with that. It's also expected for March to have wetter than average conditions from the Tennessee Valley on through Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, bullseye over Ohio, on into the eastern Great Lakes. I certainly agree with that. The weather pattern has been this way, and I don't see any change for the month of March. We're going to end up with above average totals for precipitation here in March. And, of course, that leads to concerns with the planting season. So I do think it's going to be remaining rather wet here through the rest of March. Not raining every day, not snowing every day, not sleeting or freezing rain or little snow pellets or whatever. I saw it all today coming over here. Every kind of precipitation just about has been observed today except large hail. Now that we look at the spring outlook, you see this EC. Those have seen these presentations before. EC means equal chances. That means an equal chance of above average, near average, or below average, in this case, precipitation. In other words, the outlook's not telling you there's any tilt in the odds toward dry or wet. And all of these maps, by the way, that the Climate Prediction Center puts out just tilts the odds. It doesn't mean, oh, it's going to be below average precipitation on the Gulf Coast. It just means there's a better chance of below average than above on the Gulf Coast. So you look at these to maybe, if there are some indications on the maps of tilting your odds a little bit, but not throwing all your eggs in one basket. Now, here's an interesting thing. The June through August, the summer period, they are predicting a slight tilt in the odds to below average precipitation in the upper Midwest. Maybe that's a little bit of an expansion of the dryness now in the Dakotas. If that's the case, that's an area we'd have to watch out for. There's no indications right now that it's going to go dry again in the southeast. That remains to be seen. And as far as temperature goes, we're on the edge of above average temperature, but we have equal chances over much of Illinois and Indiana for the spring period and, of course, the summer. The tilt and the odds are for a little bit warmer than average on the East Coast and out west. No cold anywhere showing up on these maps. But a lot of the right now we don't see any signals toward unusual temperatures. Okay, one last topic before I get to my conclusions. La Nina. Does everybody know what La Nina is? Well, for those that don't, there's maybe a couple of you. Cooler than average water temperatures in the Pacific Ocean around the equator. And it's the opposite of El Nino, which is warmer than average water temperatures in the Pacific Ocean near the equator. And La Nina and El Nino are two of the big signals that we can use for some long-range forecasting, specifically near the Pacific Ocean and specifically near the equator, because it's a large area of water which governs the air movements above over the Pacific Ocean. So whenever we get an El Nino or La Nina of significance, some assumptions in the global climate pattern can be made. especially near the Pacific Ocean, especially near the equator. The farther away from that area you get, the less clear that influences the weather, at least directly. Of course, there are many out there that love to take El Nino equals this in the Midwest, or La Nina equals this in the Midwest. And usually it's El Nino equals drought, La Nina equals drought. We have neither El Nino or La Nina, so that must be drought. And you see where I'm going there. Well, the bottom line is there's no really good correlations, except in a strong El Nino winter, we tend to be warmer than average with about half the average snowfall. We're in La Nina right now. It's pretty strong. And the other thing is La Nina and El Nino usually peak around December, January. So what's that have to do with summer anyway? Not a whole lot. But anyway, here's what we have. We have cooler than average water. This is the equator right here. Here's South America on the right side of the diagram. So it's cooler than average water temperatures in the middle of the Pacific Ocean along the equator. About 2 degrees Celsius below average, which means it's a strong La Nina. In winter, when we have a La Nina, it tends to be dry in the southern plains. Hey, it has been. It tends to be dry down into Florida. It was. It tends to be wet. Oh, right near us. It has been. So far, it's been working out. Even the wetness in the Pacific Northwest, which they're now getting, all indicators of La Nina. But that's in the wintertime. Globally, let's look at winter and summer. And these patterns are shown on this map for the U.S., but it tends to be wet around Malaysia and Indonesia, which it's been during the winter. But let's focus on our summer. There's one thing I noticed here on the map. I'll put a big red circle over the United States. No correlation. La Nina doesn't really mean anything once we get into summer. May have some impacts on spring, but once we get into summer, it doesn't mean anything. So if anybody's starting to say, oh, La Nina means we're going to have this summer, just kind of like, yeah, right. Because that's what you should say, because that's what it is. And just to see where we've gone, there's different regions that we measure the water temperatures. The Nino 1 and 2 regions right near the coast of South America. Nino 3 is here and 4 is out here. And we look at 3 and 4. This area to determine whether we have an El Nino or La Nina. And the blues here indicate through time the La Nina has gotten stronger into January. And now it's peaked, I think, but it's still strong. And these are the temperature anomalies in the different Nino regions. In the 3-4 region, 1.9 degrees below average Celsius at last report, which means it's strong. Anytime the La Nina is a degree and a half or more, it's a strong La Nina. Over time, going back from 1988 through the present, I think I'm going to slide this over just a couple inches so I can get, there we go. All right, thanks. Here's a look at La Nina and El Ninos over the last two decades. 7 El Ninos, 6 La Ninas. And notice, it doesn't go back and forth. Sometimes you'll have 2 La Ninas in a row, as we had in 99 and 2000. Sometimes you'll have a couple El Ninos in a row, 03 and 05. The last strong El Nino was that winter of 97 into 98, you may recall. So that was 10 years ago. And now we're in a strong La Nina. So that just gives you an indication of kind of how frequently they occur, and all the other years we consider neutral. So my comments on La Nina. A strong La Nina is continuing in the Pacific Ocean right now near the equator, and trends and model forecasts indicate it will be continuing through spring. So that means we have to still consider it, but it will weaken. It always does. And there's really no indication on anything for our summer, although some models indicate it may last into the summer. So you're going to hear talk about La Nina in the summer, but we really can't equate that to anything. So here are my comments. This is what you really want to know. Yeah, I'm just kidding. I'm not over time yet. Yeah, okay. My spring comment. Hey, I'm giving more comments than usual because I think a lot of times people... No, a lot of people think, oh, he doesn't tell us anything. Well, I'm telling you something right here. Here's what I'm telling you. I haven't even told you anything here, but here we go. Here's my first spring comment. Going into the season, soil moisture is adequate to excessive across the Corn Belt, So that is going to slow early planting, I think. And for the river floodplains, I don't see any improvement yet in that area. It's going to be, there's still going to be some problems with flooding because I think we're going to have more rainstorms here this month. And now with some more snow falling, there's going to be some melting too. So we're not going to see a rapid improvement here. Now, that doesn't mean planting season is a wash, but I think early planting is, there are some serious concerns across the Corn Belt, especially from Illinois eastward. As far as the weather pattern, it's remaining wet. So again, I think river flooding, more of it is expected, unfortunately. And any bias toward dryness in the Midwest over the next couple months will probably be well to the northwest. And that's if that happens. I'm not saying that they're going to start out really dry, but I'd say up toward Minnesota is where there's the best chance of maybe a drier spring than anywhere else in the Midwest. Couple other comments regarding spring for the Corn Belt. I think the focus is going to be on too much rain rather than not enough. We often talk about drought, but the last few years I've been here, really more of the problems we've seen in recent years have been from too much water than not enough. The drought in the southeast is not over, but we've seen great improvement on that in recent months, and they may actually have problems with too much topsoil moisture here, believe it or not, going into planting, and they start planting in the Delta and Southeast sooner than here, so that's an issue. And the long-term trend in the Southern Plains wheat areas is still toward drought, but one thing I want to point out with the hard red winter wheat, it only takes one or two good rainstorms to go through there to greatly improve the wheat conditions. So if you're monitoring the wheat prices, you have to monitor the forecast in the Southern Plains, specifically where it's still been very dry in the panhandle areas of Oklahoma and Texas and southwestern Kansas, southeastern Colorado. I don't think they're going to be going to surplus moisture anytime soon, but one or two rainstorms could greatly help that crop as it comes out of dormancy. So it's not a done deal that the crop is all gone. Now, some fields out there in the panhandle areas are lost from the really dry conditions in the fall. But some areas in Kansas and Oklahoma, central Oklahoma into south central and eastern Kansas recently picked up decent moisture. So some wheat fields did get some moisture. But I just want to say, even if the long-term trend is drought, one or two rains out there could make a difference for some of the wheat. Now the summer comments. Equal chances dominate the temperature rainfall outlooks for summer, and that's typical. With long-range forecasting, there's not too many signals that we can see that are really accurate for the Midwest, unfortunately. We live far away from the oceans, which warm and cool more slowly and therefore can influence the weather more greatly. There is a slight tilt in the odds to drier than average conditions in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa for summer. I'm not saying that it's going to be a drought or dry there, but that's the area to look toward for maybe being some dryness issues. But we are starting the year with excellent subsoil moisture, so that's a positive for crops, at least getting a crop this year, even if things start to deteriorate during the summer. And now I'm going to address some of the things that I was asked about at the very beginning. La Nina means nothing regarding our summer weather. Drought will not be the result of La Nina. Drought, if we have it, will not be the result of the expansion of dryness from the southeastern U.S. I've heard that said a lot. I don't see anything to it. In fact, the southeastern drought is shrinking in size, and even if it's still there, it doesn't always grow into the Midwest. And certainly, drought will not occur just because it's been 20 years since the last big one in 1988. We will get a drought. We will get it again sometime, but they don't occur on a regular calendar. So if you've read these things anywhere, I don't believe them. That's what I'm saying. Does this mean we don't have to worry about drought? Of course not. A drought is possible this year, although I don't think in the next couple months. But it's also possible that growing conditions will be very favorable. And that's what you have to do, is you have to keep in mind all the possibilities, just not the end of the world. You know, there are people every year that are going to tell you about the next disaster that's coming. And if we do have a disaster this year, it's probably something that nobody foresees right now. I've noticed in my over 20 years of forecasting around here, the biggest events of the year are usually something that pops up on the radar no more than a week in advance. So you got to follow the weather through time. And, of course, as we look at the models, you get this model hysteria all summer long. And then the big GFS model says at noon, now it's going to be dry or wet. The models aren't always right, so you still need to consult with meteorologists that understand all this and put it in perspective. Because the markets will move based on every model runs update during the course of the growing season. But we have a lot of models we look at. The GFS is the American model. It goes out 16 days because it goes out farther than the others. People tend to look at that one more. Sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong. And, of course, you can get in-depth weather on AM 580, 35 minutes past the hour in the morning. Our ag reports are at 8:51 and 2:32. That's Central Time. And for those of you in Indiana, we also have the Eastern Time. Just shift everything an hour since we're in Indiana. And if you can get WILL TV, we have your weather on every night, even weekends now at 9:58, except for the next week and a half when we're on at various times because of the fun drive. I think I'm on at 10:28 tonight or something like that, and our online sources. And I'll just close and say drive safely. When I left Champaign-Urbana, it was already snowing a couple hours ago, so the roads are going to be a mess out west. That's all I need to do is knock this down to end the show. All right. So I thank you. And if you have any questions, I'll take a few here. I probably am going to head out after this because I got to work tonight. So I got to make sure I get back there.
Go ahead if they have questions.
Sure.
If you have questions, go ahead and address them.
Okay.
About hurricane season.
Oh, about hurricane season. That's a good question. I don't think it's really known yet. I can tell you the water temperatures right now in the Atlantic Ocean basin are running a little warmer than average. So that's a little bit of concern. That is something that is the La Nina, El Nino thing, because there's not a good handle on how fast La Nina will die down. So there's no definitive answer on the hurricane season. I think it's safe to say it'll be more active than last season, but less active than in 04 and 05. But that's almost stating the obvious.
Ed, let me go ahead and put you on the wired microphone, and I can take this out into the crowd.
Okay.
Questions?
Any chance of the 93 flood like we had in that spring?
Any chances of the 93 flood like we had in that spring? Well, I think there's always a chance of that with this wet weather pattern, but I doubt it's going to be that extreme across the Mississippi basin because it hasn't been as wet to the northwest, and so you're not getting all the rivers to the northwest feeding into the Missouri and then the Mississippi. But on the other hand, some of the flooding has already been worse than we've seen in a long time in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. So it'll be different than 1993. But I do see over the next couple of months the potential for more significant flooding in the eastern half of the Corn Belt.
China had some rather adverse weather that affected their poultry and hog herds this winter. Any comment on their weather regarding their winter wheat crop?
Well, as far as China goes, they had very, very cold weather for a while. And the winter wheat, as far as I know on that, they won't know how much was damaged until it actually comes out of dormancy, which is usually the case with winter wheat. But some of the northern areas, there might have been some damage. The weather has very much improved recently in China. They're getting plenty of moisture in the southern China plain, in the southern production areas of China. To the north, it's not bitterly cold anymore. It's still rather dry, but dryness at this time of year is typical. So they've gone back into a more typical weather pattern, but they had about a seven-week period where it was unusually cold. So that could have affected some of the wheat that wasn't protected by snow.
Ed, from a temperature perspective, looking towards the end of the month of March here and into the beginning of April, what do you see? Or maybe you don't have, I guess I'm just curious of your indications, purely from a temperature perspective.
From a temperature perspective, well, first off, over the next week, I think we're going to be running much cooler than average. We're now getting into this stage, such as this past weekend, where we may have a couple days where we have a spike up 50s, 60s, which is not unusual for this time of year, but the trend is still cooler than average here over the next several weeks. So I don't see us seeing that dramatic increase, and I'm guessing you're leading towards soil temperatures there. I don't see the dramatic increase just yet, but I think probably as we go into April, things will start to correct themselves a little bit. That is one thing with La Nina. Sometimes, there's not a good correlation, but sometimes you tend to have a cool start to the spring season, and we certainly are seeing that now. But that's in part because of the wetter weather pattern that we're in, too. So I don't see a big change in our pattern here over the next several weeks through most of March, but after that it will probably start to change. And I think as far as the bias toward wetter than average for the spring period of March, April, and May, I think that's really tilted toward the first half, mainly toward March, maybe very early April. I will say I am concerned about severe weather season, and while we're talking about freezing rain, sleet, and snow, I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of weeks we're talking about tornadoes and large hail and damaging winds.
Yeah, Ed, you just touched on my question for a second there, but if you consider the last 2 or 3 months is definitely being above average rainfall, I would think, going out like to the next 9 months, say, so you're looking at a year-long period, would the fact that we've had above normal rain start, could you logically expect lower than rain later on so that we kind of regress to the mean for the year? Or would it more likely just mean that we're off to a wetter than normal year?
Well, I'm going to give you an answer that you probably don't like because it's not going to be definitive. But the truth is, over the long, long haul, whatever that is, we do deviate toward the mean. Whether we do that within the next 9 months or 2 years is what remains to be seen. In other words, because it's been wet now, does not mean it's going to turn dry, nor does it mean it's going to stay wet. Every year is a little bit different. I think that that remains to be seen as to whether there's a dramatic shift, say, between now and the end of the summer growing season. So we've been wet. I will say one thing. If we have a lot of flooded areas for a while, the odds of precipitation being a little higher than average continue in those areas with everything else being equal, because little thunderstorms that develop will have more moisture to work with. Droughts do feed on droughts, and wet areas do feed on wet areas. So it would have to be a dramatic change in the weather pattern to make it a lot drier.
Ed, thank you so much for coming today. Give him a round of applause.